Princeton, and I'm part of the Atacama Cosmology Telescope team. And Suzanne will talk more about this tomorrow. So a brief outline. As motivation for the talk, I'll present some results from the Atacama Cosmology Telescope. And then I'll talk about SSET theory, how we model the SSET effect. I'll talk about the power spectra, and then I'll talk about how the power spectra scales with sigma 8. And then I will talk about the constraints on sigma 8 from action SPT. And basically, here's a teaser plot where we want to arrive at the end of the talk where, given some power measured on some scale, say L of 3000, for some frequency, once you plot actin SPT on here, you can read off what is sigma 8 given the assumptions for different gas physics. So briefly, I'll talk about this paper that ACT put out by Joel Fowler in January 2010, and it's a measurement of the CMB power spectrum on scales of L of 600 to 8000 at 148 gigahertz. So ACT, it looks kind of dark, doesn't it? Yeah, it looks fine on my computer. Yeah. Yeah, I remember. And life. So ACT is a 6-meter primary mirror. We have been observing at three frequency bands, 148, 220, where there's an thermal SSET null, 280 gigahertz, and we have roughly arc-minute resolution. In the Fowler paper, in Joel's paper, we focus on a subset of the data, only 228 square degrees of the high signal to noise, and only one frequency band at 148 gigahertz. So the main plot in this paper is a plot of the CMB power spectrum on scales that are not probed by WMAP. So way up here, you have the normal acoustic peaks, and then you have the silk damping tail and the lens CMB component. So here are the measurements. And what we're fitting for is point sources from galaxies. So that's this curve right here. And we're fitting for the SSET contribution, both thermal and kinetic. And this is the template that we've been using.
So you have stupid amounts of signal to noise at LDS in 2000. And so why don't you make power spectrum phase thinner and actually resolve those peaks? Wouldn't this be
very easy? Same night talk, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I'm all set.
I think we do put that in the paper, stupid signal to noise.
No stupid. We're going to cut out the stupid from the record of this.
So, you have one frequency band, but you have, you know, two degenerate components, the point sources in the SA. And so what we're really measuring here is we can scale these templates with an overall normalization and try to fit for what's the amplitude. And with only one frequency and two components, you have a degeneracy between the amplitude of the point sources and the amplitude of the SSET relative to this template. And this template is made for lambda CM cosmology with sigma 8 of 0.8. We put this out in, the ACT team put it out in a paper, came out last summer, was recently published in January. And this template is based on a halo gas model that was calibrated against observations of the ICM. I'll talk about this in more detail later in the talk. And so with this, the main constraints are that relative to this template, we measure the amplitude to be less than 1.63, which is the 95% upper limit. So it's a 2 sigma upper limit on what is the maximum amplitude. And if you make the assumption then that the amplitude of the power spectrum scales as sigma 8 to the 7th power, something we've heard about earlier in Gil's talk, then you would say that sigma 8 is less than 0.86. So there are two questions that come out of these results. One is, how much do you believe this template? Is it the only possibility for how the gas behaves in the ICM? And the other question is, given that once you've measured this correctly, how do you interpret sigma 8? Does the amplitude of the power spectrum really scale with sigma 8 to the 7th power? So that's motive.
Like SPT, did you include this correlation between point sources?
We do.
We do. Yeah.
But that's usually the red and the blue
arrow.
Yeah. Okay. Is WMAP included in the fit?
We also tried with WMAP, but I don't think it makes much difference. Yeah. So.
So that's the motivation. This is the bulk of the talk on the theory side, making templates for the SZ angular power spectrum. So briefly, I won't go into too much detail, but this is just to give you an idea of what we do to simulate the SZ effect. What we want to do is we want to model 1/8 of the sky by making a light cone that gives us the entire matter distribution out to redshift 10, basically to probe the full nonlinear electron distribution after the epoch of reionization. And this is a plot just showing you in co-moving distances for one octant of the sky, just a sample of some of the halos that we find in this n-body simulation. And this is kind of a semi-analytic approach in that we model the matter distribution numerically, but we try to prescribe how the gas behaves in dark matter halos using a model by Jerry Ostreicher and Paul Bode, and also how the gas behaves in the intergalactic medium. So a little bit of gastronomy. The template that was used to fit the ACT results and also used by SPT is what we call the standard model. This is a model that has star formation calibrated against optical observations. This has feedback, energetic feedback, tuned such that we match X-ray observations. So this model was presented in a paper by Paul Bode, Jerry Ostreicher, and Alexei Baklinin. And so stellar and gas fractions and X-ray scaling relations are reproduced by calibrating these two quantities. Another model, which is always useful when you understand the effects of gas physics, is something that's really basic. And this is an adiabatic model, which has no star formation, no feedback, basically purely gravitational heating. Two other scenarios we want to consider is, what happens if the star formation rate is actually higher and the feedback is slightly stronger? So what we call a low F-gas model has twice the amount of stars as in the standard model and twice the amount of energy input, the same feedback efficiency, but because there's twice as much star formation, there's twice as much energy input. And we call this the low F-gas model, because the low gas fractions now agree with the kind of observed lower one sigma limit. So all three of these models assume that in hydrostatic equilibrium, the hydrostatic pressure is entirely thermal. But we wanted to consider another case where, because of bulk and random gas motions in the ICM, you're going to have some contribution from non-thermal pressure. And so, again, this model has star formation. It assumes that 20% of the pressure is non-thermal, but it turns out that you need none or very little feedback in order to reproduce the observed X-ray scaling relations. So in terms of figure of merit, we got two smiley faces for these the standard and the non-thermal model. And so these two models are somewhat consistent still with observation. The adiabatic model is ruled out because, of course, we see stars. And the low F-gas model is probably on the lower one sigma value for the X-ray scaling relations. It's proportional to the thermal pressure. So it's not a constant non-thermal component because there's no gradient there and would have no effect.
But everywhere the thermal pressure is just knocked down by 20%.
Yes. So you can, so the motivation for these models is that this will probably give you an upper limit on the SZ power. This condition model is meant to provide a central value. And these two possibly give you some indication of what the lower limit might be. And anybody want to guess which of these two models will give you the lowest?
I think Nick already knows himself.
lowest what?
Lowest amplitude for the SZ power.
We know it's gas, that's why it's called low.
Is the star formation noticeably different between the non-thermal and the standard?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that next. So we want to match the models against available observations. And unfortunately, available observations are limited to low redshift, so about less than 0.2. So what's being plotted here is mass of payloads, M500. And in the bottom panel, we're plotting the stellar fraction within R500. And on top here is the gas fraction within R500. So in the standard model, it was meant to fit the gas fractions measured by Yen-Ting Lin in 2003. The low F gas model, we want to consider a higher star formation rate, but in a simple way. So we multiply this by a factor of 2, which kind of gives you an idea of this upper limit here in terms of the 1 sigma uncertainty.
So is the ice yielding included here? Or?
Yes, it is.
How is it included? Yen-Ting didn't include ice yield.
Yen-Ting didn't, but I think it's in the more recent Giardini, and also in Gonzales. So the Gonzales results were also based on, I think, the similar clusters, but they included the ICL, and actually shows probably a more sharper transition. In Yen-Ting's results, I think the masses are derived using X-ray observations. This Giardini one, which we reused for the non-thermal model in the screen, by the way, I'm going to keep the same color schemes for the different models so that it's not confusing. And this more recent measurement uses masses derived by loop lensing. And the more recent star formation rate is actually pretty similar to 2 times the standard. We do a pretty good job of reproducing the pressure profiles compared to X-ray observations. The clusters, which are larger than 10 to 14 solar masses and less than redshift of 0.2, are rescaled in stack so that they can be put on a single plot. So here, this is the scaled profile, radius divided by R500, and pressure divided by some characteristic pressure, which we call P500. And what's shown here in the dark, I guess it's hard to see here, dark line is the central value for the standard model, plus the 1 sigma and 2 sigma uncertainty scatter, or the scatter in this distribution. And we're comparing it against this recent results calibrated against X-ray observations from, I think, the LOSAT sample. And that's given in blue here. And it just shows the range that you get for 10 to the 14 or 10 to the 15 solar mass halos. And also, for comparison, we showed Shiro's gas model from the Max and Seljak paper in 2002 in green here. Actually, no, sorry. It's in orange, actually. Sorry about that. It's in orange. So Shiro's results will always be in orange for the rest of this paper. And this green here is actually the Nagai simulation. Sorry about that. So let's try to understand the effects of star formation and feedback and non-thermal pressure. So this is a map showing the SZ temperature fluctuations at 148 gigahertz, one of the bands that ACT measures, and also pretty close to one of the frequency bands for SPT. This is a 4x4 degree field with 10 to the 15 solar mass halo at redshift 0.3 right in the center. That's kind of a typical cluster that you might find right now. The color bar is meant to show you such that zero temperature decrement is given in white. And so at this frequency, the thermal contribution to the FZ is always a temperature decrement. You get negative fluctuations. But the kinetic can be either positive or negative, and so you do see some sprinkling of positive or increments here throughout the map due to the KSZ. So this is a difference map taking the adiabatic model and subtracting the standard model for the same field of view. And you see that the adiabatic model has a larger decrement than the standard model, at least towards the center of the cluster, but it has basically less pressure on the outskirts of the cluster. And this can be understood in that once you have star formation and feedback, you're removing gas, mass, and energy from the budget, and therefore you have a little bit less signal and a little bit less pressure in the standard model. When you have feedback, you are pushing the gas out to larger radii, redistributing it. So it turns out that in the standard model, you may have less pressure in the center, but by pushing it out a bit, you have a little bit more pressure in the outskirts. This is, again, the same difference map, but looking at the low F gas model compared to the standard. So here you see the opposite effect. The low F gas model has more star formation and feedback, so it has less pressure in the center, but the feedback pushes it out such that it has slightly more pressure on the outskirts. Here is the difference map for the non-thermal 20 model minus the standard. And as Gil was asking earlier, basically you have 20% less pressure overall, and therefore this non-thermal model has less pressure, and therefore it leads to a temperature increment in terms of the difference map. So the next three slides are going to show you the angular power spectrum for the three components, the thermal, the kinetic, and then the frequency-dependent SZ, which couples the thermal and the kinetic. So the top panel will show you the standard power spectrum as a function of multiple L. And it's in linear scales, which is a little bit different from what you normally see. And the bottom panel shows you the ratio of the power relative to the standard model. And again, the color bars are correct now. Standard in black, adiabatic, low F gas, non-thermal, and Shiro's model, KSO2. So this model, I took it directly from the WMAP Lambda site, which is publicly available. There's a difference of maybe 4% in omega BH squared, and I didn't correct for that here. I just wanted to see a direct comparison. What was that? This is the Compton Y, so it's either 146 or 280 gigahertz. So this is the Compton Y. So let's focus on the three models where you just have star formation and feedback. So that would be the red here, adiabatic, the standard, and then the low F gas. So already from the maps previously, you can see the effects of star formation and feedback, and it in terms of reducing the pressure once you increase the star formation. And so you see the same trends here in terms of the amplitude of the power spectrum. There's also another general feature in that the thermal component has a pretty broad peak, and that there's actually a characteristic scale where it peaks. And it kind of shifts this way. So it turns out that this peak in the power spectrum kind of correlates to, you can imagine calculating the mass for the halo above which contributes half the power. So you call this something like the half power mass. And in the adiabatic model, this characteristic mass scale is actually lower. And so it peaks at smaller scales. Whereas in the low F gas model, a lot of the lower mass clusters and groups have much more, relatively more deficit in the gas. So therefore, this half power mass is actually higher, and therefore the power spectrum shifts to slightly larger scales.
There's feedback. It has twice as much star formation as the standard model and twice as much energy input. So unfortunately, though, you would think that maybe by using this peak that you can kind of break the degeneracy in the gas models, in that if it peaks on larger angular scales, you would have a lower amplitude. But that's it's much more complicated than that. So if you look at the non-thermal model, it turns out to give you the lowest amplitude out of all these models. And it has a shape that's very similar to the standard, because simply the non-thermal pressure was by design just assumed to be proportional to the thermal pressure everywhere.
Isn't it just a scaled version?
No, I think when you balance the hydrostatic equilibrium, there may be some slight changes, I think, in the parameters. Also, it isn't exactly the same shape because the star formation is different in the two models. So we made the standard model much
earlier. Gas fractions as a function of mass and things like that.
It differs. Yeah. Okay. So we can go back to that plot if you want to see at the end. And for comparison, the KS model, the physics is quite different, but it resembles our standard model quite a bit. So the difference is, right now, so both teams are really focusing on this range, 2 to 4,000, because this is where the SZ signal becomes larger than the CMB, but it isn't dominated by the rising power of the point sources just yet. So we have about maybe a 3,000, 10 to 20% difference between the KS model. So if you were fitting our standard model or the KS, you would probably find very similar results. But these models give us an idea of what is the kind of theoretical uncertainty in these SZ models. And right now we find that there's about 45% difference at L of 3,000. Although this upper limit, feedback model, is probably something you can already rule out.
Next is the kinetic SZ power spectrum. You notice the change in amplitude here. You got at the top here 15 microkelvins, and here you got 3 microkelvins. And the kinetic SZ is frequency independent, whereas the thermal, there is a frequency dependence there. And so what we wanted to show again is the four models. Assuming that reionization occurred at redshift 10, so this would give you electron scattering optical depth of about 0.08, which is consistent with the latest results from WMAP 7. And also for comparison, I wanted to show the standard model, the standard gas model, but assuming that reionization happened really late, probably the lowest bound, which is at redshift 6. And there we have constraints from the Lyman alpha force from seeing quasars in SDSS. So the kinetic is a little bit different in that you have contributions both from halos and from the intergalactic medium. And it turns out that for at least high redshift reionization, the intergalactic medium is a much larger contribution than the halos. And so in our models, the IGM component for all these models are the same. And so really the only differences that come out from these models is due to the gas fraction, in the halos. And here you get the trend that you would expect. The highest gas fractions are for the adiabatic, which is pretty close to cosmic, and then standard, the non-thermal, and then the low F gas. Whereas in the thermal case, the low F gas model and the non-thermal 20 were actually flipped in terms of their amplitude. So what's kind of interesting is that for people who want to use the kinetic SED to, say, study when reionization happened, so this gives you an idea of the differences you would get for homogeneous reionization between redshift 6 and 10. So if you did reionization at 8, it would probably be somewhere here. But it goes to show that if you want to use the KSZ to study reionization, you would actually need to understand the halo contribution reasonably well, because that's the level of differences are comparable.
So this is what we
actually measure. It's the SZ power spectrum at 148 gigahertz. Here, the thermal and the kinetic are coupled. And again, you have the models. The difference here is in the KS model, this is a purely thermal contribution, so there's no kinetic term here. So whereas before at L3000, KS was larger by 10 to 20%, it is now slightly smaller by, 5% or so. So when we used to study, when we used to think that sigma 8 was like around 1, the ratio between the thermal and the kinetic component was much larger, over an order of magnitude, because the thermal component scales much more strongly with sigma 8. But now that sigma 8 is thought to be lower, around 0.8, the ratio between the thermal and the kinetic are down to factors of 3 or 4. So the kinetic component is actually starting to become quite important. And we've also not modeled kind of the inhomogeneous term from patch reionization, which would probably make the kinetic component even larger by maybe a factor of, 50% or so. So now, before it was about 45% differences between the models. Now we have about 40% at L3000. So before I talk, I show the constraints from acting SBT. We have to understand how these templates or these simulations were based on one value of sigma 8, some fiducial value of 0.8. But we need to understand how the power spectra scale as a function of sigma 8. And we can do this by rescaling the power spectrum, but without having to run additional simulation. But I'm not going to go into the detail of how you actually do it. You basically just have to weight the contribution of halos by their number density. So kind of generic formalism, we define this parameter or the scaling amplitude as ASZ, which is the ratio of the power spectrum for some value of sigma 8 to divided by the power spectrum at sigma 8 at some fiducial value, say 0.8. And we assume that it has a power law dependence, sigma 8 to some power alpha. And this scaling index, in principle, is a function of it's a function of scale, L, function of frequency, a function of cosmology, for example, sigma 8, and a function of astrophysics, basically your gas models. And remember, this, for the longest time, most people would quote that alpha is around 7. So what's plotted here as a function of sigma 8 on the bottom, from 0.6 to 1, is this power law scaling index for the thermal, the kinetic, and the coupled SZ at 148 gigahertz. So this is basically the alpha for the thermal, or the Compton Y parameter, and this doesn't depend on frequency. So instead of finding 7, we find a value that's probably closer to 8, and these are exact calculations here. I also repeated Ichiro's halo model calculation, and that's shown in orange here. And again, you get something that is pretty similar to 8. So there's a reason why you get differences in the different models. Previously, I talked about this half power mass, this mass where above which halos with larger mass would contribute half the power at some either at some multiple or in total. So as this half power mass increases, for example, when you have larger star formation and feedback, say in the low F gas model, you move to the higher mass end of the mass function, and there the dependence of the halo abundance on sigma 8 grows, and therefore you have a larger scaling index. For the kinetic, so you can derive from perturbation theory that in the linear regime, it's given approximately as 4. But when you add in the halo contribution, you have a nonlinear component which scales higher. And depending on, say, when reionization happens, for our model, we find that alpha KSZ is more like 5. For the SZ, alpha here would depend on the ratio of the thermal to the kinetic. And you will find that at 140 gigahertz and at sigma 8 of about 0.8, you get a value of somewhere between 7 and 8. So when people have been taking our templates or Ishiro's template, which actually, since it has no kinetic component, it should be scaling as to the 8th power instead of, say, 7.5 here. If you were to move away from the SZ null, say, down to 30 gigahertz, then there the thermal component dominates over the kinetic much more, and so the scaling should be closer to 8 than it should be, than 7. But when you move towards the SZ null, then the thermal component starts to disappear, and then what you have left over should be scaling as sigma 8 to the 5th power. So now that we know how the power spectra scale, we can then make a plot where, based on some SZ power in microkelvin squared at L of 3,000 and at 148 gigahertz, what value of sigma 8 you get for the different gas models. And, you know, this is not a rigorous analysis in that the results here from Acton SPT were not thrown into Markov chains, but I use the public values in the data in the paper. So in Fowler et al., by measuring relative to the standard model, you find that you need an upper limit of 1.63. And in the SPT paper by Luker, their best fit value relative to the standard model is 0.42, plus or minus 0.2. And so you can then, knowing what is the amplitude, knowing the standard model, you can then convert this to some power, and it should be pretty close to what both teams measure. So ACT has a 2 sigma upper limit, and right now, you know, all of the models are consistent, it's not ruled out. Again, this is the adiabatic model. We probably know that this gas model is incorrect, so it's probably safe to ignore the constraints from this. The best fit value for SPT, this is purely based on the SZ power and not in combination with running chains where you throw in the WMAP results. And here you find that the best fit values tend to favor a pretty low value of sigma 8, probably for the standard model, close to 0.7, and the highest value you would get would be closer to 0.75, at least for the central values here. All of these are thermal and kinetic at 148 gigahertz. The standard model is the one where the gas fraction is calibrated to Alexei's X-ray observations.
We actually want to do so field 153 is the frequency for the SPT, right?
Yeah, so I took this value, though. This is relative to the template. So then I multiply this to the template at 148 gigahertz.
Yeah, just
saying,
yeah. There's actually a
15%
correction between 148
and 150.
Sure, yeah. But assuming that
it's a huge factor, right? I mean, 15% here and there, well,
it depends on whether you would get a 15% difference in this value, though, at if you fit 148 gigahertz. Right? There's a difference between in the power, 148 gigahertz and 153 maybe. But remember, this is relative to 153 gigahertz. This is relative to 153 gigahertz, but then I use this value to multiply, to get this power, I use this value to multiply to the template at 148 gigahertz. I could have done it at 150. I don't think anything would change that much. But this is more illustrative to see what is the range that you would get from these two experiments given these gas details.
But it's a bit funny to do it this way because you're effectively holding all other cosmological parameters fixed to whatever your simulation values are.
It's true.
And you're only, and so for instance, so there's all the various degeneracies, but if sigma 8 really was 0.9, that would require a much higher tau, for instance, which is going to drive your KSE up.
This is upper limit though, to sigma 8, right? So yeah, it's true. Like I said, this is not a rigorous analysis where we throw it through the chains. And John is taking
care
of that.
Full chains and good.
Yeah.
But did you scan the optical depths and the KSE components? And
so, I mean, I haven't done details like trying to even say what KSE is as a function of tau change. That's true. So, it's just ASE, but full chains with ASE, not infectious disease. So, if you want to say what is the real allowed range of average GPM cosmology, that's a separate question that doesn't actually require.
I mean, you can try to estimate from this previous plot, right? You can take a lower limit of what the kinetic would give you, and that would then give you an upper limit from the thermal, right? You're looking at about a fraction of a microkelvin here. So, fraction of microkelvin compared to, say, about 10, fraction of microkelvin compared to about 10 microkelvin. So, that would be the difference that you would move up when you have a different KSL model. So let me just summarize. We have four gas models. The standard model has already been used by ACTIN-SDT, and it's available online. We will make the other templates for the various sigma-8s available online within a few weeks. And just some generic features. When you have star formation and feedback, so as gas mass and energy is removed through star formation, and as gas is pushed out to larger radii by feedback, the SZ power spectrum decreases in amplitude, and there's also some shifting of the peak. When you have bulk and random gas motions, non-thermal pressure support can have stronger effects than energetic feedback, so this is kind of a really interesting point, actually, somewhat surprising at first. On reducing the thermal contribution to the SZ effect. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
So the moment you have this 50% uncertainty, which is comparable to what with noise, which you measure, so you're already nearly limited by systematic uncertainty in predicting these things. But is there any hope for these things to get better?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I would rather put myself out of business, and I think you want to build the templates based on observations. So the clusters that you would find from ACTIN-SDT, you probably want to follow them up with, say, SEA, so you have some indication of what the profile looks like. And then given some estimate for what the mass would be, you would then use these to build your template. And you want to have a range of mass and redshift to do it properly. You don't necessarily need a large sample, but you want to be able to cover this thing. So I think that's the way to go. But this is just to give you an idea of basically what the different gas physics can do. At some point, you do need theory to interpret what you find observationally.
So, can you go back to this comparison with Arna profile?
Okay. So first off, the X-ray, remember, they're really focusing on this range in R500, about 0.1 to 1. Out here, they don't actually measure. There's no X-ray, you know, the X-ray constraints are pretty bad. So what they do is they take the X-ray data for this range, also take the scale profile from the die from numerical simulation and fit an overall model for this generalized NFW pressure profile. So because of our resolution, we don't do very well in terms of modeling the central pressure. But this is, you know, pretty small scales which contribute.
So I'm trying to see where they're carried.
It's easy to see on the projector, but on my laptop. But this is where our line is right here.
So your line just happens to sit exactly where it should everywhere.
So this is not surprising, right? Because we calibrated our model to fit the stellar fraction, the gas fraction from X-rays, and also the scaling relations like TX, LX, YX. So it's not surprising that...
I think
that
it is, because you get also the same profile. Those are all integrated quantities. So. And those are all normalized at R500, but then at, even at 10% of R500, you seem to get this right. So, and either this model is just so good, or...
I mean, it's not so good, right? I mean, it's not perfect. So here is... So these are best fit values from in the two blues here, from Mano, for two different masks. But if you actually look at their data, the scatter is, you know, their range is much larger. So these are just best fit, and it doesn't really show you the scatter in the observations themselves. And we're slightly lower than they are, I would say. And Chiro was telling me yesterday that there actually is some funny things going on with the Arnold X-ray, because it seems to be higher than other X-ray measurements. So we're not, our standard model doesn't exactly reproduce them. I think Nick and his hydro simulations, they do a really good job.
But in the outer scales, they match very well, right? It seems.
Yeah, it just goes to show that our model matches numerical simulations well, not necessarily X-ray, because there is no information on the X-rays out here. This is all entirely based on the dot.
What does the non-thermal model look like?
So the non-thermal model basically is like the thermal, but 20% less. And if you take the observations and you correct their masses for that 20%, then it would match pretty well.
Okay, so there's no more questions. Let's thank you again.
Thanks for
the room. Which is going to mean, I guess,